The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health and Mental Health for Ulster County. With me this morning is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Our very special guest today is Dr. Mark Tack. Dr. Tack has been with us before. He is an infectious disease specialist in private practice in Ulster County, and he has also served many years on our Ulster County Board of Health. So welcome, Dr. Tack. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Carol.
Oh, absolutely. I just want to give a few statistics. We're going to be speaking about flu today. The New York State Department of Health does a weekly what's called influenza report so that we know exactly what the trend is. And certainly, as of today, all 62 counties in New York State have reported having episodes or having issues with the flu. The incidence of flu cases ranged anywhere from 4 to 80 cases per 100,000 population. So it varies in some places, but it is widespread. And as of January 13th, as far as laboratory confirmed cases of flu go, over 17,000 lab confirmed cases of flu have been reported, and over 5,200 people have been hospitalized with the flu so far this season. And we've had one pediatric death to date in New York State. So, Dr. Tack, you're seeing flu on a daily basis. Maybe you can give us a little bit more information about the flu, basics about the flu, as well as some of the other problems that you're seeing this season.
Sure. Well, influenza is a virus that's been around for thousands of years and routinely circles the earth. So while it's flu season now here, it's not flu season in Australia. 6 months from now, the virus will circle halfway around the world and it will be flu season there. We typically use the flu season on the other side of the world to predict the prevalent strains going around the world and to design our vaccines. So each year, a committee of physicians gets together and looks at what's happening in the world and tries to pick the prevalent strains going around and create a vaccine that we can give here to try to protect the population. This year, the experience in Australia was, even with the vaccine, they had a very aggressive year. It was predicted that we may, and that's what we're seeing. But it's very important to understand that influenza is not the common cold. It's a very, very serious respiratory illness. It's been stated that 10,000 people a year on average die in the United States in a typical flu season. This season already appears to be more aggressive or worse than the average season, though it's still hard to tell.
It's probably sometime in February, I guess, that the CDC predicts that we'll be able to look at the match between the circulating viruses and the efficacy of the vaccine. Nevertheless, if it's not a perfect match, they still strongly recommend receiving the vaccine with the thinking that it does help to somewhat mitigate the severity of some of the effects of the virus. And certainly there's enough of a percentage of people who are protected both from the A strain and the B strain that certainly make it prudent to get that vaccine. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, so I just left a patient, a 90-year-old person who was in the hospital with the flu, and she said to me, "But doctor, I got my flu shot this year." And I said, "And you're alive. We're having this conversation. You might not be had you not gotten this flu shot." So the best analogy I have is a seatbelt. We all put our seatbelt on when we get into a car. We put it on before we get into the accident, not after. It doesn't do any good. Now, seatbelts won't save everybody's lives. People still die in car accidents. Flu shots will not prevent every case of flu. But it is a protective mechanism that we can use that gives us our best chance of surviving. That's why we have airbags and seatbelts and anti-lock brakes. We put in as many protections as we can to try to give us the best chance to survive and live. Flu vaccines offer people the opportunity, the best protection we have, other than moving to some village 2,000 miles north of the Canadian border and not coming in contact with another human to avoid getting the flu.
Statistically, vaccinations almost across the board have saved millions of lives. I mean, human beings are now protected from 14 serious diseases that used to be pretty much fatal, and that's not the case. I personally learned the hard way with the flu, just as you talked about, Dr. Tack. I was one of those people who didn't think I ever needed it until one time I got it really badly and then ended up in the hospital on IV and overnight and in really tough shape.
Well, the CDC, actually, I do want to say this because they recently held a really wonderful grand rounds on the flu. And one of the things that they mentioned that looking back to the 2016-2017 vaccination experience, from what they can best gather, they believe that it saved over 84,000 almost 85,000 hospitalizations, over 2.6 million outpatient visits to physicians, and about 5.3 million more serious illnesses. So these are substantial numbers. You know, one of the things, too, that you see, though, from year to year, which is also interesting, is that depending on the strain of the virus, and of course, viruses can undergo something called an antigenic shift, meaning they change in their particular characteristics. And this year, it seems to be very heavily an H3N2 year. We saw a similar year in 2014-2015 with this particular strain combination. And the interesting thing is, with this particular strain, the pattern is almost identical to what it was in 2014-2015. A very early kind of surge and peak with multiple hospitalizations, et cetera, and then kind of gradually drops off over the next several weeks to months. So it may be a similar pattern, but something that'll be looked at very carefully by the CDC.
Well, I think it's very important for people to understand that this is not something to take lightly.
Absolutely.
Influenza is a deadly virus.
Yes.
So there are things you should know and things you can do to protect yourself. So far, we've talked about the vaccine, and that's certainly the first line of defense. But there are other lines of defense, and certainly making good health, staying healthy, avoiding being in places where lots of people are sick. If you're sick yourself, not going to work.
Absolutely.
If you develop a respiratory illness, contacting your physician or provider immediately and getting seen and tested. There are medications such as Tamiflu and Relenza on the market.
And the earlier, if it is flu, the earlier you start the Tamiflu,
absolutely,
the better.
Absolutely. Good hand washing has really been the biggest impact in flu, is just wash your hands. Even though it's a respiratory virus, it's a droplet spread virus as well. And so just making common sense decisions, avoiding crowded places in the wintertime, especially in the middle of a flu season, is the first, really the first steps you can take. Certainly if you're not healthy to begin with, if you're immunocompromised, if you have COPD, heart disease, if you've been a smoker all your life, if you're on medications that might impact your immune system, even more important, I tell those patients, shop on the off hours. Don't be sitting there at 5:30 in the afternoon when everybody's in the supermarket. Go in the off hours. Stay out of crowded places.
Absolutely.
Don't put yourself in harm's way.
Don't bring your very young baby into the middle of a crowded supermarket with everyone being sick.
Correct.
Hand washing is really critical in keeping fingers out of eyes and mouths and so on.
Hand washing is the single most effective way to prevent not only things like the flu, but many other problems as well, diseases. It's just a basic for staying well.
Yeah, my daughter makes fun of me because I tend to be somewhat obsessive about it. Having worked, it's an occupational hazard of working at the health department.
One thing I would point out is we hear all the time that I got the flu shot and then I got the flu. Well, it's not possible. We don't use live vaccines. There was only one version in the past years that was, and it was a nasal spray that isn't even available anymore. But the flu shot itself has not had a live virus. You cannot get the flu from the flu shot. I pardon me, but it would be like getting pregnant without having sex. It doesn't happen. So that may be controversial, but I'm going to go out on that limb. Okay, you cannot get the flu from the flu shot. It's not possible. People come in and tell me this, and it's a very frustrating conversation. What I tell them is, remember, we're giving you the flu vaccine during cold and flu season. It will not protect you from the common cold.
Right.
It's not intended to. It won't do that. You may get a runny nose, sore throat, body aches. Colds are out there. That's not the same as influenza.
Exactly.
Question for you, Dr. Tack. You said something earlier about it being a worldwide phenomenon, that when it happens in certain parts of the world, like Australia, where right now it's summertime, whereas here it's winter, are flu outbreaks temperature referenced in any way, or how does that work?
Somewhat so. That's a very good question. So certainly we seem to see more outbreaks and clusters in the north, but some of that may be because we spend more time indoors clustered together. We do know that influenza still happens in Florida and Arizona and Texas and warmer climates as well. It's not restricted only to cold weather, but it does appear that the lifestyle in a cold weather community is more promotes the spreading of the virus. I actually always call the Disney effect of the flu. So Christmas time comes around, everybody flies down to Orlando, California from all over the country. They stand on Main Street, USA, cough and sneeze on each other. They spread the flu. Then they get back into their airplanes, fly home, and spread it all around the rest of the country.
I wonder if Disney puts that in their marketing material.
I'm guessing that I'm about to get
the, I hope they have hand sanitizers for everyone.
They're actually very good about that, but I'm guessing I'm about to get a complaint that I apparently picked on Disney. I just think that environment where we crowd people, no different than college dorms in the wintertime, and when, you know, it promotes meningitis. We know that when you put lots of people under stress into close environments, diseases are more easily transmitted.
Well, we want to learn more about this topic. There's a lot to know. And right now we're going to take a short break. We'll be back after these words. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio.
In emergency care, it's all about experience. At Health Alliance Hospital Broadway Campus, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, it's another way we're investing in you. We're board certified in emergency medicine, nationally recognized in stroke care, and use telemedicine to give patients access to the region's leading specialists. Patients tell us we make their experience exceptional by treating them with the utmost respect. Health Alliance Hospital Broadway Campus, we're advancing care here. Visit hahv.org for more.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guest today is Dr. Mark Tack, an infectious disease specialist in Ulster County. Dr. Tack, can you tell us a little bit more about the age groups that could be potentially impacted by the flu?
Everybody is impacted by the flu, from the youngest to the oldest. Interestingly, in medicine, one of the questions we always tell students, if you're not sure who's at risk, always answer the young, the old, and the infirmed. Because usually people who are elderly, they're very young, or those people with chronic illnesses are at the highest risk. But interestingly, influenza attacks across all ages. It attacks across all socioeconomic levels. If you look carefully, this year, I believe, up to date, we now have 20 pediatric deaths in the United States reported. So we think of young, healthy children. The case in New York State, I believe, was a young child, a 10-year-old, who came from Connecticut, was playing ice hockey, had no medical history at all, who died recently. So this is a virus that attacks all ages.
Doctor, if a person thinks he or she has been exposed to the flu, what should they do in the immediate, short term, and maybe more intermediate term?
In the short term, if somebody thinks they've been exposed to a case of influenza, they should speak to their physician. Certainly, if a case has been confirmed. For instance, if I got a call from my wife that she went to the doctor today and she was confirmed with influenza, I would want to speak to my provider immediately and be put on prophylaxis. Even with a vaccination, you can take Tamiflu, one pill once a day for 10 days, and it can significantly decrease the likelihood of you developing influenza. But it's important that it be started quickly. Once you start to develop the symptoms of the disease, you're no longer in the prevention mode. You're now in the treatment mode.
And what are those symptoms?
The symptoms of flu are fever, chills, body aches, cough. head congestion, but it is a respiratory illness. One of the things that's very important to understand, it's not just a runny nose headache, it is a respiratory illness. In fact, most people don't realize that the first advanced medication in influenza was not Tamiflu, but a year earlier, a drug called Relenza, which was distributed in a discus that you inhaled. The medication actually went into your lung and stayed there and worked in your lung because that is where influenza does its damage. It's a respiratory illness. It then releases poisons, toxins that cause the other symptoms, but ultimately it's a respiratory illness.
We know that pneumonia certainly is one of the things that we have to be on the watch for in individuals who are affected by the flu, but you were just telling me earlier about some cases where you've been seeing it impact the health of the heart.
Right, so in today's New England Journal of Medicine, there's a report of a case of influenza causing significant cardiac damage. We experienced a patient with a similar type event just recently here in Ulster County, where a young, otherwise healthy person came to the hospital with an influenza swab positive test, rapid test, and was noted to have significant heart dysfunction for no other apparent reason. Now, it hasn't yet been proven in our case to be the flu, but clearly these types of systemic infections where poisons and toxins can be released into the bloodstream have the potential to impact kidneys, liver, heart, and all of the major organs. Again, that's why 10,000 people annually succumb to this disease.
And of course, it's important, though, to reemphasize for people who still are a little bit confused about the use of antibiotics. The flu is a viral disease. It's a viral illness. So antibiotics per se for the virus are not effective. However, if a subsequent secondary bacterial infection, a bacterial pneumonia, or what have you should develop, at that point you might consider use of antibiotics. But certainly the antivirals such as Tamiflu is the thing that you would reach for as a treating physician if someone were to come in with classic flu symptoms, not an antibiotic.
Right. And putting an antibiotic into that person is like them breaking their right arm and casting their left leg. It really does no good at all.
Right.
We have made some advances in flu medications. In fact, there's now intravenous medications mm-hmm. for patients who cannot swallow pills or liquid or who are too sick. They land up in the intensive care units. There is now infusion antiviral medications that have been shown also. So we're developing an armamentarium of medications, and we have rapid testing available in many doctors' offices, certainly in the emergency rooms and walk-in clinics around the county, so that there's no reason that a person can't get to medical attention, be evaluated by a healthcare professional, have the appropriate diagnosis made, and be put on appropriate therapy in a very timely fashion.
Dr. Tech, when a patient comes into your office thinking that he or she has been exposed, walk us through the steps that you take to determine, and then if you would, talk to us a little bit about what people should do once they've gone home to take care of themselves during that period of illness.
Sure. So the first thing that happens is this time of year, you'll see a sign outside our door that if you have a respiratory illness, please put a mask on before you come into our waiting room and sit in the waiting room with other people so that we try not to transmit. We don't want the waiting rooms to become a transmission site. The same in the hospitals and in other offices. You'll hopefully be quickly taken into an exam room where a provider will interview you and ask you, tell me what happened. When did you get sick? What were you exposed to? What are your other medical issues? What medications you might take? They'll examine you, listen to your lungs, look for signs of infection, fever. The nurse will take your temperature, your blood pressure, your pulse. The doctor will make an assessment. And then we will perform frequently, if they feel it's appropriate, a rapid test where we place a small cotton swab into the nasopharynx, the back of the throat, and it's sort of like we all know the doctors have strep kits or home pregnancy kits. It's basically a plus minus. We add the appropriate agents and wait a few minutes, and it will tell us yes or no if you have the flu. These tests are not 100% accurate, but they're very, very helpful. If it's positive, or even if we suspect you have the flu and it's negative, we will prescribe likely an antiviral medicine, and we will recommend that you start taking that medicine quickly, not that you wait a day or two. We'll also ask you to go home, not go to your job or to work and spread this disease, and rest and keep in touch with us. Let us know how you're doing. Obviously, if a patient is very ill, we may refer them to the hospital for more supportive care. If they're stable enough to go home, we would recommend that they go home and they really practice common sense things. Stay hydrated. It's very important to maintain fluids.
Right. That's what happened to me. I didn't drink enough to offset the amount of fluid I lost from the fever and sweating.
Right. Tylenol certainly is, or other medicines to bring down temperature. Rest. Stay away from anybody in your family who might be at high risk for complications. And quite honestly, stay away from anybody in your family that you can. Obviously, if you're the primary caregiver to somebody else, hopefully they've been vaccinated, and contact their providers so that they can be put on prophylaxis, prevention, so that they can be home safely with you, and stay home. Do not go back to work until your symptoms are broken and you've had no fever for at least 24 to 48 hours.
I know a lot of people want to try to tough it out, or they feel like, you know, they're letting their colleagues down, but actually they're harming their colleagues by going to work too early, right?
Well, this is a conversation that we have with the hospital staff all the time. The governor now and the health department has rules that you either get a flu shot or you wear a mask anytime you're in the hospital during flu season. And the reason is we want to protect the patients. We don't want a staff member coming in thinking, I just have a cold or I need to work because I need the money, and they're coughing and they're going into rooms, and all of a sudden these people, we have outbreaks or clusters in hospitals. We have a particularly
and in nursing homes.
Nursing homes and all.
Exactly. So if you're ill, you know, and symptomatic, you certainly don't want to go visiting folks in a congregate setting like a nursing home and risk infecting a very vulnerable population.
Right. Just stay home. That one day, those several days of paychecks, I know that there are people who live on the edge and, you know, financially it's challenging, but, you know, it's also very, very important for themselves, for their long-term health, for the health of the people around them and the community. Just stay home.
And how does, just out of curiosity, how does Tamiflu work, or these other prophylaxis? I mean, how do they act on the viruses too?
So, Tamiflu is what's called a neuraminidase inhibitor. So neuraminidase is a protein, it's an enzyme actually, within the virus itself. And Tamiflu acts to inhibit the enzyme and prevent the reproduction and spread of the virus within the respiratory system, within your body.
Mm-hmm. And does zinc have any connection? I mean, I've heard from various sources about zinc having some of the same effects. Is that, have you read or researched anything on that?
Well, over the years, there's always been talks of alternative medicines that may help prevent or treat viruses. However, zinc, as others have been put through clinical trials in placebo-controlled trials, and has not held up as a benefit in preventing or treating influenza. Right. Get your vaccine.
It's still not too late to get
right.
the vaccine.
Absolutely.
Because flu season can certainly right. persist right up into May. We've seen cases that, you know, for the next several months as well. So absolutely, go to wherever it's available at this point in time and go ahead and get it.
I know that the pharmacies, a lot of practices, I know that we still have flu vaccine. I would also comment that there are different flu vaccines. This year, most doctors and offices are using what's called a quadrivalent vaccine. It has four strains as opposed to the older strain vaccines, which were trivalent. And we're using a high dose vaccine, which is for people 65 years and older. It produces a higher immunological response. And I did read some recent articles that suggested that the high dose vaccine is effective in that population and has prevented a significant number of hospitalizations, doctor's visits, and ultimately deaths in that population.
Good to know.
There's a lot of great information on the New York State Department of Health website.
Absolutely.
NYSDOH flu or CDC flu. If you search those two terms, you'll get great information. And Dr. Tack, how do people reach you if they'd like to come and see you and talk to you about this?
They can go onto our website, mahv.net, or they can call our office at 845-338-7140.
That's great. Thank you so much for coming in. Important topic.
We appreciate your time in this very busy season.
And speaking of time, we're out, and that's about it. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and your community healthy and strong.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.